If you have a child with type 1 diabetes, whether they were diagnosed 5 days ago or 5 years ago, you continue to have questions. These are the questions about the emotional side of living with diabetes, the questions about how to parent diabetes. I'm Joanne Robb, a psychotherapist and fellow T1D mom, and I've been parenting diabetes for almost 15 years. In this podcast, I'm here to answer your questions about the emotional and relational challenges that come with being a caregiver for a child with type 1 diabetes. Before we dive in, I have to remind you that I'm not a doctor and nothing that I offer here should be considered medical advice. If you want to make any changes to the way you or your child is managing their type 1, please be sure to check in with your doctor or medical team. Let's get started. Hi there and welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm delighted to have you. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us who your T1D kid is, how old they are, and what's bringing you onto the show?
Awesome. Sure. My name is Svetlana. My son's name is Jordan. He is 8 and a half. He got diagnosed on June 14th of 2023. So we're coming up on a year, but not quite there yet. We had a really challenging year prior to diagnosis. And so while the diagnosis was terrifying and the hospital trip was really unexpected, it afterwards has been a semi of a relief to know what's going on and how, you know, why he had so many challenges earlier on. So that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm. Explain to me just briefly, like, were the challenges in that year before diagnosis, did you feel like they were related to diabetes and it just didn't make
sense? In retrospect, they all were. So I'm a clinical psychologist. I specialize in kids. My son very clearly had ADHD from the second he popped out, super manageable, you know, high energy, bouncy little child, super happy, easygoing for the most part. And then we started school in September, and throughout the transition to first grade, he just got angrier and angrier and angrier. He was constantly angry and agitated, started really losing control of his behavior, started really having a difficult time transitioning to school, got lots of phone calls from school about headaches, getting picked up, and lots of trips to the doctor to get screened for COVID and strep because he had headaches and stomach aches but with no fevers, which now all makes so much sense. And the morning routine was just so stressful every day because he would eat a gluten-free bagel with cream cheese, strawberry, and milk. And we thought we were giving him such a lovely, well-balanced breakfast. But it turns out he was going to school 20 minutes after that with, you know, probably, I can't even imagine how high of a blood sugar. So that was his most rageful, kind of angry moment, was that transition. So he went from loving school to, like, every day getting to school was so hard. And every day we'd get calls from school. And he was just always angry and always disconnected, like, wake up all the time. And, you know, in my field in mental health, people kind of were saying over and over that, you know, you don't see it in your own kid. I brought him to the psychiatrist. I brought him to a pediatrician. I was like, something is wrong. This is not ADHD. I diagnose and treat this regularly. Doesn't change from age 6 to age 7 this drastically with no life changes. Something is wrong. And he was so hungry all the time and so angry and, like, climbing into our fridge at bedtime. Just dysregulated all the time. And now in retrospect, we're like, oh, those phone calls were usually between 12:30 and 1:30 from school after lunch, school transition in the morning. The worst times where he was most dysregulated was when we had family over and we always have dessert, you know, we hang out and eat big meals. So in retrospect, now we can understand that kind of diabetic rage was, you know, taking over his life and our lives. And so now that we know, we kind of use it as a barometer. When he's having off days and he's really high, you can see the agitation building, especially if it's more than one day where he's off. So that was our journey. And it felt really frustrating because I'm in the medical field and I work with pediatricians daily. I brought him in so many times, and we have in our family several autoimmune diseases. So it really should have just been like a very simple, hey, why don't we just do a blood test or urine test? You've got a lot of autoimmune diseases in the family. Would make sense to screen for the others. But we didn't until one day he threw up at school and I brought him to the pediatrician, and I, on that June 14th day, and I sat there and I was like, I'm not leaving till you literally test him for everything. I just don't know what else to do. And they were like, oh, go to the emergency room immediately. Like, his blood sugar is at 400. He's like, you know, so that was.
That's an amazing story. Actually, I've never heard about a kid who is so sensitive before they were diagnosed to the highs. So it sounds like, thank goodness for insulin, right? He hopefully is more regulated now.
Totally. I mean, it was like, by the time we left the hospital after like 3 days, it's like we brought home a year earlier, personality wise, like a different person. And he goes to school, he, you know, with no problem. Is he a happy morning kid all the time? No, but he's what I would say, like a typical hyper little 8-year-old who's got a lot of energy to burn and wants to do everything that he wants to do, but is really just so much happier and so much easier and transitioning and doing great at school in second grade. Oh, so
I'm so glad to hear. That's really the miracle of insulin right there.
It really is. Yeah, totally.
Incredible. Did you have a specific question you wanted us to think about together?
I do. So what's been really the hardest part for us is Jordan is super athletic, does lots of sports, and we're recognizing that based on, you know, the season, the sport we're doing, his body reacts differently to the food and the insulin levels. And based on what time practices, it throws off like our routine for how do we plan for what he's having for dinner, and also make sure, like, if we have to change his dinner, do we change his sister's dinner? Because we usually just, we're a type of family, like we make one food, everyone eats it, we don't have any other options, sort of thing.
Yep.
So we're really struggling with managing that, that routine, and the difference in his response to, say, playing soccer versus snowboarding versus, you know, his American Ninja Warrior, where he's like hanging and flipping and all that sort of stuff. His body responds so differently to all of them. And it's really hard to plan as a family how to keep him regulated with his diabetes and also allow him to live the life he wanted to live before diabetes and do all these different sports with different seasons.
Okay. So a little bit of that is a medical question, which of course I can't answer. But I'm wondering, like, what kind of help and support are you getting in figuring it out?
I think what's tricky is that our medical team is really much, like, often we'll say, well, it depends on this situation, or basically they just try to regulate his, like, they've changed his overnight insulin or his carb ratio rather than really focusing in. I think it's just helping us understand how each of the different types of exercises affects him. And then how do we plan food wise? Like last night I made spaghetti with meat sauce, and he didn't have practice as late. But tonight we have leftovers, and I was like, oh, we could do spaghetti at meat sauce, but he's gonna get home till 8:15 and bedtime is like at 9. And so I'm like, no way, there's no way he's going to process all that. I'm going to be up, you know, regulating that for hours. So my main question really, I think, is like about lifestyle rather than specifics of like his insulin, of like, we've been told to live our normal lives, right? And that diabetes is not driving our life, that we're living our life with diabetes as kind of this part. And clearly we have to do things really differently. And clearly when we just try to live our lives, dinner at 8:15 for him doesn't really seem to work, because then his blood sugar is like a 300 until midnight. And, you know, either my husband or I are up trying to bolus him the rest of, you know, to get him back in range before we fall asleep.
What system is he on?
He's on Omnipod and Dexcom.
Okay. The closed loop?
Yeah.
Okay. So I love
Dexcom 6.
Right. Yeah, that sounds right. I love the way you're saying it. We've been told to live our normal lives. And I think it's true. You can. And it just takes so much more work. So it sounds like he has a lot of varying interests. And you know, anybody in this space will know, if they have a child who's done more than one activity, that each activity is really different and you're trying to catch up, right? You're less than a year in from diagnosis and you're trying to catch up. So what I want to say to you, I have two thoughts. The main one is, give yourself some grace. like this might take longer than you think to get to living a quote normal life, to like doing diabetes to live your life. It might be, and this might not be a good answer, I don't know. Like he's, to me, he's pretty young, but he also has ADHD and has like a hyperactive, it sounds like, quality. So it's good often with those kids to get them to run them basically, right? Yep. But it might be you do a little less until you can figure out how to do one thing and then how to do the next thing or how to feel more comfortable with the way the numbers go. Because also as he grows, some of these things will change, right? That's the additional fun piece. But the last part I'm thinking of is, I think with newly diagnosed parents, and I'm going to put you in that category pretty firmly, there's more desire to keep tighter control. So I am hearing he goes up to 300 with spaghetti at 8:15, right? Like, you know how to manage that. You know how you're going to have to bolus more. But I think sometimes letting go of the tighter control, you know, there's a trade-off. There's a series of trade-offs that you're making. And the question is, which of these things is most important to you? Is it most important that he do ninja warriors and snowboarding? And I forget what the third one was, or is it most important that you have him more tightly in range and you work on one of these things at a time? Right. And I think that only you can decide and choose what's best for you. I also think that there are ways you could probably get more help.
We're thinking about, do we need to, we go to Children's Hospital. We're thinking about switching to the Joslin, where, you know, so many people have spoken highly about pediatric experiences there. But at the same time, I feel like I learned so much more from other parents who have kids who have diabetes or people who live with diabetes than I do from any professionals. I do like, you know, the concept of identifying what is our main goal right now. And I think my main goal is to keep him living his life the way he wants to, in terms of not the way he wants to with his rule. Obviously we have a ton of rules, but like with sports are his like go-to outlet. And they're actually the most regulating thing for him in so many ways. And they're like his future passion as well. Like he wants to be a professional everything, and which is great. And I want him to see that diabetes is not going to hold him back from being a professional snowboarder, even though the first two times we've gone snowboarding with him, it was really hard to regulate. And he was a 40 for like, I don't know, 4 hours when we got off the mountain, no matter how much food we gave him. But, you know, we've learned from that experience and planned better. And the third time was much better than the first two. So that's better. But I guess I think this maintaining his sports routine is a priority. And so then it's saying, do we let go of some of the range? And is it okay if he's, I don't know. I mean, I think his A1C has dropped significantly, but it's still really out of range. And is that okay? And the doctors just keep saying, well, you're doing great for where you are right now, which makes me seem as somebody in the professional field like, well, there's still a long way to go to where we want you to be, but we don't want you to feel bad for how much work you're already doing.
Okay, let's slow this down, because I love the values clarification, right? I've been thinking about this lately in general with this, everything I do in Sweet Talk, that like values clarification is an important component of what we're aiming for and striving for with diabetes management, even though it doesn't seem like it. Because really the question is, what are we centering? And none of us, not a single one of us, even the mommies who post the perfect day on, you know, on social media, none of us actually want to center diabetes. Right? That's not what we actually want. What we want to center is something about joy. Right? It could be about connection. In your case, it sounds like it's about sports, and that's fine.
We're going to take a quick break and be back with more answers.
One of the hardest things about diabetes is the food. Your kid has to eat, but there's so many foods that send them high or are tricky to dose for. And at the same time, you don't want to restrict their food choices. You want them to be able to feel like every other kid. To help you navigate the many challenges of food and eating with type 1, I've created the Sweet Talk Snack Course, a free mini course that gives you 6 bite-sized lessons to support your T1D kid in having a healthy relationship with food and eating. Sign up for it at diabetessweettalk.com. And I know plenty of kids who've played lots of sports and are big athletes. I think you need to give yourself some grace here because it's going to take some time. And it sounds like you're missing a few tools. Like, there's a, are you, where are you located?
We're in Massachusetts.
Okay. Because Integrated Diabetes in the Philadelphia suburbs, but does a lot of work online, was started by Gary Shiner, who wrote Think Like a Pancreas. And he's kind of one of those famous people in the type 1 space. And my understanding, I have not worked with them myself, but I have worked with parents who have worked with them. And my understanding is that they're really helpful for problems like this. So you get a consultant, you're not having to change doctors. You're not like, there could be some many good things about where you're located. It's a, probably an out-of-pocket cost that I do not know, like if there's any way to bill your insurance for it. But I think you can get some very targeted consultation and just see if it helps, right? Like if with snowboarding, it helps with that particular, with soccer, it helps. Like I think these folks are almost all have type 1 themselves and often are athletes. And so you're going to get some pretty good, and they know the systems very well. So they know how to manipulate and work with the systems. So that's a thought I have. The other thought is, talk to your doctor, because this is an off-label usage. Not every doctor uses it, but you really should talk to your doctor about using a mini gluc. So a glucagon, right? Which you might not even have. A lot of people have Baqsimi or they have Gvoke. They have
Is it
other.
glucagon a nasal spray?
No, that's the Baqsimi.
Oh,
So
okay, sorry.
a glucagon is another rescue drug, but you can mix it and use smaller doses of it. It's an off-label usage, and it releases some of the glycogen stores in the body. So it
Okay.
has a way of helping support a child who's low. So you don't have to keep feeding, 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 right?
Okay.
It has a bit of a rebound. We use it a lot in my house. So in other words, the liver stores glucose in long strings of glycogen. And the drug tells it to release some of the stores, but then the liver wants to recapture and fill up its stores of glycogen. So you have to feed some in order to cover that. And often you have to feed some stable carbs to help. But it is a good remedy instead of overfeeding a child when they cannot eat anymore. So
Right.
again, not all doctors will prescribe that. So, and will advocate the use of that, but it's something that I think you should ask your doctor about whether or not they will do that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thought because the scenario really was the first day on the mountain. He did great. We managed. He was in great range. We got home from the mountain and he just like, so it was like 2 hours after a whole day on the snowboard, like plummeted. And like we were eating. And then at night, you know, it's 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. He's still so low. He's like, if you give me anything else, if you give me one more sugar tab, I will actually throw up. Like, stop. I was like, but what else am I supposed to do right now? I don't want to like give you an emergency anything if you're alert and okay, but we couldn't get it to go back up. Eventually, like it did, and it wasn't a crisis, but it was like hours of that type of low. And then for the next like 4 or 5 days, his metabolism was like insane. And like he spent like 3 or 4 days being around an 80 to a 90, which is not typical for him. Not super, that's not super low by any means, but like he could eat cereal and was barely like spiking comparatively to cereal, usually makes him a 300. So I was like, is this like an after effect 4 days later from snowboarding? So
Seems
that was
like
a
it
huge
could be.
learning curve.
Yeah, it seems like it could be. And I think that if you talk to folks who are helping type 1 athletes manage, they're going to say to you exactly that. Like when my daughter plays volleyball, all night is gorgeous and the next morning is gorgeous, even though normally, same thing, after breakfast is horrendous, right? So the exercise makes a difference, right? And the question is, how do you start to figure that out so that you can center your value of letting him have this? And so I want to encourage you to get a lot of help, a lot of tools. Keep in mind what you're centering. Know that it won't always be perfect, right? It won't. It just won't. And I just was talking to somebody who's going to be on the podcast with me. And he was talking about, he's a type one who's 24. And he said, you know, we don't like a 65 and we don't like the 300. We wish we could take them out, but it's not the end of the world. So right. I think keeping that in mind is good if you're wanting to center something like all these athletics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're definitely learning. I'm definitely letting go. I don't like if he's with at school or anywhere else, I'm trying, you don't call anymore if he's, you know, 75. I don't call anymore if he's, you know, just reached 300. I've kind of, I'm like, okay, like we'll see where it goes and what works it out. So that's a learning curve for sure. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm also learning like, oh, there isn't an immediate like consequence that he's stuck in forever. Like if he has a bad day or two, like his body mm-hmm. is not destroyed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for us, we also do see, you know, it really affects him. If he's had a couple of days where he's really high, he feels pretty crummy and he feels agitated again, and he just is not a happy camper. And if he's pretty low, he's like super hyper and jittery. Mm-hmm. And so he's very like, it's very easy to tell now what he mm-hmm. like, I could predict without looking at the number on the Dexcom where he's at a good amount of the time. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like him staying in range is important also just as a mood stabilizer, right?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that feels important. I'm not saying don't center what right. you're wanting to center, but yeah. I think that's some of the answer to the question of like, when the doctors say you're doing fine for right now, you know, there are all kinds of guidelines. And another thing you should talk to your doctor about is, and get information about, not for me, right? Cause it's not my area of expertise, but, kids before puberty are not affected by high blood sugars. Like it doesn't lodge in the body in the same way that it does post puberty in terms of causing health issues. So really you get a little bit of, I'm not saying it's a pass, not sure, at sure. all, but you get some time to figure it out, but talk to your doctors about that research, you know, double check me, make sure I'm right. Right. Mm-hmm. But what that means isn't that he should be 300, right? Clearly he shouldn't, but it means that you get a little bit of time to figure it out.
Right.
Like how to keep him in range. I will say that when I hear a child is 40 for a few hours, I feel highly alarmed because I think that those are setups for seizures. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that was our first exposure to that. And I was terrified. I was like, you know, yeah. are we calling like the emergency? What are we doing? But he was also kind of like laying quiet, like laying and like saying, like, I feel really low, but able to like keep the whole time. Like he was talking, he was alert. He, you know, he didn't close his eye. Like, you know, I work in a medical office. I see many seizures. I didn't see any of that. Mm-hmm. And his Dexcom was reading between 40 and 50. And we did a finger stick and it was, you know, between 40 and 50 within mm-hmm. the time frame. So he was there and mm-hmm. oh, alert. So in some ways I was like, what does that mean? Like if he's here and he's at 40 and he's like completely alert, what does that mean? Is his low like, you know, so yes, I also was really scared about that, but
yeah,
maybe that, feel but, better because he was okay.
Yeah. But it's also a time where I want to encourage you, like call your doctor's office. If he's been 40 in the 40s for over an hour and you can't get him up, I'd call and say, I'm throwing everything at this that I can, because they might send you in for a line, right? You just mm-hmm. get a sugar drip, because it's not like, I want you to lean in to help, right? So that you can figure it out, because you're going to figure out like when he snowboards, as soon as he's off the mountain, even if the numbers look fine, to shut off his insulin for 2 hours, because you know, he's going to go low, something like that.
Oh, we actually just now turn off the whole day. So outside of lunch, as soon as we eat breakfast, we get to the mountain, we just turn it off. That's mm-hmm. what we did on our third time out. And it was just like a beautiful like change. Mm-hmm. And, I think our fourth time out, he was still on the lower end, even without insulin. I was like, you know what, buddy, just eat those bags of M&Ms. I'm not even going to bolus for this mm-hmm. because you're going to go back out in the mountain and it's fine. So we're trying to kind of navigate that. An activity mode is like something we're newly using now much more regularly.
So another thing about that, let me just interrupt you for a second, is that Again, check with your doctor, but him being off insulin for X amount of time, at some point it becomes unsafe, right?
Okay.
Because at some point, even if the numbers look good, he can start to develop ketones. And you don't
Okay.
want that, right?
Yeah.
So these are things you should be checking with your doctor about as you're learning, right? Like how to do this. So a lot of kids, what they'll do is they'll unplug basically for some period of time and then replug in, give a little insulin just to keep themselves safe because without insulin, the body starts to produce ketones, right? It's starting to burn fat just like it did before he was diagnosed.
It's that's really interesting. When we've had so many times where we're really high for a prolonged period of time, and the school nurse and we have tested, and thank goodness, and I'm hoping I'm not jinxing, he's never been above like a 0.3 on ketones since diagnosis. So I guess I'm also maybe not testing enough and probably should be testing ketones even more, but because we've never gone above 0.3, even like after like, six, 7 hours where we couldn't get him down, we didn't know why. When we know why, we don't really test. When we're like, you just had cake, it's going to take forever. But that's a good point, and I should ask about that. Thank you.
Yeah, so I think that you don't need to check more. Generally, the reason kids are high is because they ate something that the insulin couldn't catch up to. So unless it's longer than you expect, or I think checking sometimes can be useful, but generally it's food and dose. It's like the food dosing combination. But I think that different doctors would say different things is my guess, but between 2 and 4 hours off insulin is like the maximum of what most doctors would want, right? And
Okay,
they even
that's it.
prefer you turning your volume down on your basal, basically. So that's the other thing is I'm not as familiar with the Omnipod anymore. We used to be on it, we're not anymore. So I don't know how the profiles look, but maybe you just have really different profiles that are named snowboarding, soccer, right? You just create lots of different profiles so that you can just switch into them and you don't have to be doing this dance.
That's a really good idea. I feel like very undereducated in how to make profiles on my own, and I think I need to sit down with a team and just practice doing that.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, on the t:slim, you can copy a profile and then you can make adjustments, right? So for volleyball, I take my daughter's regular profile, I make a copy, and then I make adjustments to all the times that I know are going to be hard for her because of volleyball, right? I'm sure it's similar on the Omnipod. Anyway,
Yeah, because we have different settings for like night, morning.
yeah, exactly. So how's this landing? This idea of centering what you value and like getting a lot of support.
Yeah, I think it's really meaningful to hear, just kind of have the reminder too, not from the medical team, that we are really new at this still.
Oh,
I think because of what I do and where I work, sometimes I forget to have grace with myself too. I just kind of expect that I should be able to do this better for my own kid, but it's like a full-time job and I have a very full-time job. So sometimes I think it'd be great if I just took some time off and actually met with the team more, like really made time to sit down and can learn like I did at the beginning. There was such an influx of learning. There was so much space and I took so much time to learn and, process, but then since then it's been pedal to the metal of normal. So I think this is a good reminder to maybe step back and readjust my expectations and make some time to do that, learn more of that learning.
The thing I recommend so much that people who listen to me more would probably be like, oh, there she goes again, is family camp. Right? So I think it's good for everyone in your family. Even your daughter who doesn't have type one, it's good for her too, right? Because if I don't know, different family camps, it turns out, are structured in different ways, but generally, you parents get some education and you get a lot of community. Your T1D kid gets a lot of community and normalizing of his experience, and the sibling also, because there's, in family camps, the whole family comes. And so the siblings get the normalization of, like, yeah, I'm dealing with this sibling who has this thing, and there are ways that that's hard for me too. So I don't know which camp Jocelyn partners with, but I'm sure there is one. I just don't know.
Yeah, they
I
run their
can't
own.
remember. they run their own.
But he's going to a sleepaway camp for 5 days. Mm-hmm. We're not all going, but we have done like riding on insulin and like other programs where the family is included. So yeah. I think we just continue to do more of that too. And actually I've done those. My husband and my daughter have not. And I think mm-hmm. we need to mm-hmm. make that more of a whole family thing because everyone's affected by it, of mm-hmm. course, obviously.
Yeah, but I think it's great you've done those things. And I think that, I mean, we did family camp for years and years. And every year I just, you know, the learning is a very steep curve initially. And then it doesn't level out though. It's just the curve shifts. Right. And I feel like you keep accumulating information. And so I don't think you need to take time off from work unless that's what you want to learn more. I think that continuing to put yourself in situations where you can continue to accumulate the information you need is going to be helpful for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This is a good just balance check, I think, just to have this pause and reflect on my own, like what is our current goal and make sure we remind ourselves all to prioritize that and not get lost in all the goals all at one time.
That is a really smart perspective.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again for listening today. If you want answers to your questions about parenting a kid with type 1, I'd like to invite you to join our live recording sessions so you can ask your questions in person. Not only will you get the support you need and deserve, but through the podcast, you'll be helping other T1D parents to know that they're not alone with the challenges they're facing. To join one of my live recording sessions, simply go to www.diabetessweettalk.com and click the banner at the top of the page to register. Again, go to www.diabetessweettalk.com and click the banner at the top of the page to register.